You're listening to Reading Writers, a podcast on the joy of reading widely.
Hey guys, how's it going? This is Aaron and Dave with a new episode of Reading Writers. And today we have a special guest with us, our friend and colleague, Chris Martin. You guys have already missed all the fun stuff in our conversation because we just finished laughing a whole bunch about things that would get us in a lot of trouble. So we have to skip all that. And instead, let me tell you about Chris. Chris is a content strategist here at Lifeway. He is an occasional blogger at millennialevangelical.com. He blogs a lot more at Lifeway Social. He's also one of the co-creators of that endeavor with our pal Jonathan Howe. Really super smart guy on how to do social media well in a God-glorifying way. So if you're not reading Lifeway Social, you really should, because it's good. It's really good stuff. He's also married to Susie, who I've not yet had the pleasure of meeting. I did meet her once in Franklin one time.
Oh, that's right. We just bumped into you shortly after you moved here?
I think it was just before.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so I've had
the pleasure of meeting... In the parking garage. Was my family in town?
Yeah, I think so.
I think maybe her mom was in town. I think that might be one.
Yeah. So anyway, I've lied on the podcast already. I actually have
very much in passing. You get a pass.
Thank you. But most importantly, Dave has another piece of information.
Well, two things. Chris really wants you to know that he is not Chris Martin from Coldplay.
But he sings
and he loves
him.
Talking about that as
hey,
well.
Have you ever seen us in the same place? No.
That's a good point.
Whoa, that's a great
good
point.
That's like Batman and Bruce Wayne together.
This right. is this
also
is,
like Michael Bolton and Michael Bolton.
This Office is, Space reference.
There
this
we
is
go.
Not, this is reading writers, not reading songwriters. Though,
that's
so
true. That's
I'm not going to make you sing this time. So
this
we're not going to
get
know.
Awkward really fast.
Yeah, right.
But one of my favorite things too, although I appreciate Aaron's intro, is that his dog is named Rizzo, which makes him a Cubs fan. And Chris is one of my favorite Cubs fan, being a Cardinals fan, so we should hate each other, but we do love each other because we both love baseball.
And
I'm sorry, is baseball
is,
like
and we are
cricket?
Bound together it by is, the we are yeah. bound together by the blood of Christ before any baseball affiliation.
Man, that's deep. That's money right
feeling
here.
So good, man. My day
you
is
know,
made right
that,
now.
Guys, that was the most Christian this podcast has been in since we had Brian Dembozic on the show in season two.
Oh man, he took y'all to church. I bet
he probably did. Yeah. I can't remember anymore. He tried to convict us of sin over audiobooks.
Oh wow!
And whether he thinks that they count. He doesn't think they do, and we think he's wrong. So,
all right,
that's right. That's right. So, so one day he will repent and come to and come to know the good news.
One day.
The other thing that we haven't shared about Chris, aside from the fact that we obviously have a lot of fun teasing ourselves and our coworkers, also behind their backs, is but it's all stuff we'd say to their faces and have said publicly. Anyway.
To their faces, to their back. Wait, do you say to their back?
Behind their back. Behind their back.
Both?
Behind their back. Yeah. I mean, you could say it to their back, but then that's just weird.
Noted.
But Chris has also written a book that will be published sometime between yesterday and, a couple months from now by Rainer Publishing. Called Ministering to Millennials. As a millennial, Chris being the millennial in the room, Dave and I, we don't count because we're like late 70s.
We're cynical Gen Xers.
That's right.
Nobody cares about you.
No one
That's
cares.
True. That's true. We're from the saddest generation.
No, I like to look at us as the lost generation part deux.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I think there's some great writers among us.
That's
we're
right.
not
That's
like
right.
stuck in Paris or anything like that after World War I, but we're having a good time.
I mean, we've got like Richard Linklater. We've got Doug Liman for directors. We've got Ethan Hawke, who's fashionably sad all the time.
Oh, man.
You know.
Heart him.
Really he feels
weird.
Ways about stuff.
Yeah.
He even wrote a comic book. So,
yeah.
Fun
I
fact.
Look at it as this. Look at Stranger Things. Like, Stranger Things is like Gen Xers trying to like cling to their youth and trying to say, hey, we're still here, guys.
I'm pretty sure that the guys who made that show are millennials. They're actually nostalgic.
No, they're not.
They're nostalgic for their older brothers.
They're like 40 or 41, I think.
No.
Darn it. Are they?
I'm pretty sure they're in their mid 30s.
Well, they certainly love the 80s.
They sure do, but that's because they didn't live through the
80s. Gosh. All right.
I can't speak to it. I was born in 1990. So.
Oh, that's right. Man, the 80s, the first time around for music, those were rough. Yeah. Those were rough years. You know, that said, I listened to a lot of, 1970s rock and roll music.
It's good music.
It's good music.
It's often left out.
Good times. Yeah. There's bad times. And, you know, I've had my share.
I know. That's another podcast right there. I don't know where's this going?
I don't even know.
This is about reading.
This is about books.
This is about
reading. This is about books. This is just my verbal therapy right now. So, Chris, give us a quick hit on what is Ministering to Millennials.
So, really, the book was born out of the blog. I started blogging at Millennial Evangelical in May of 2014, shortly after I got to Lifeway. Trevin Wax, a friend of mine who I'd read his stuff through college and had never really been friends with him. And then I came to Lifeway and we just happened to bump into each other in the cafe one day. And I was like, hey, I've read your stuff all through college. I didn't know you worked here. And he's like, yeah, I work here. So we became friends shortly after I came to Lifeway, and he started mentoring me in writing and blogging in general. And he encouraged me to start a blog to help theologically conservative pastors, church leaders, parents reach their millennial children and church members. And so I said, okay, I kind of think the millennial thing is kind of trite and cheesy and maybe a little overdone, but I think there is a real need there. So let's go for it. Let's get over the fact that it feels cheesy. So I wrote a blog and continue to write a blog, though less frequently now than I used to because of some new things going on, called millennialevangelical.com. And the whole point is to help evangelical pastors, parents, church leaders understand millennials generally. So that's going to be like data that's published, things like that. Reach millennials who maybe don't believe, who wouldn't consider themselves Christians. So strategies for reaching out to millennials, ways they think, helping understand where they come from. And then thirdly, equipping millennials who do believe in or who are in the church, equipping them for ministry. So just helping parents or pastors and church leaders know what makes millennials tick and getting rid of some misconceptions that are around about millennials. And the book, that's what the blog had been about for 3.5 years. And then the book is really just kind of a forwarding of that and some more timeless things that aren't, that maybe weren't appropriate for the blog and are more appropriate for a book. So that's what the book is. And it'll be out hopefully in the next couple months. Everything, the interior is done, the cover's done. Awesome. So I think we're just waiting to get it approved by Amazon and all that. And we should be good to go.
Sweet. That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. So that must have been an interesting experience trying to write that. I mean, with, as you're writing it, even the conversation starting to change from, how do we minister to millennials, to the post millennials, or whatever we're calling the youths.
I like iGen.
We could just call them the Utes, right?
Or youths for any new girl fans out there. That's a
youths.
Show. Yeah, yes. Utes.
Or just my kids.
Yeah, right.
Is that a Z at the end?
Kids. That's right.
So yeah, it was interesting writing it. I wrote the book from January of 17 to June of 17. So I wrote the book in 6 months, and basically 3 hours every Saturday morning I wrote the book over. It was really done by May, so really 5 months. But even I started writing the blog in 2014. The conversation has vastly changed from 2014 to today.
Yes.
And I think what's important is like I think generational ministry is important. And I think understanding generations is important. But I think a blog post I wrote one time, and I think it's also part of the book in a more fully fleshed out way, is millennials are not the future of your church. iGen is not the future of your church. Disciples are the future of your church.
Right.
And we just happen to be living in a time where certain generations have certain quirks that are far different from generations past.
Right.
In the book is as much about the internet as it is about millennials, because so much of what makes millennials unique and what earns them books and blogs and all kinds of other stuff is that the internet, I consider it on the level of the printing press, and a kid who grew up in Des Moines, Iowa in 2005 had a vastly different experience than a kid who grew up in Des Moines, Iowa in 1965.
Oh, yeah,
and totally. I think it's worth noting, and I think it affects how you minister to people. And so that's, you know, the conversations, you know, millennial isn't in vogue as much anymore. I don't expect the book to sell a lot. Sorry, publisher. But I really, but that's not the point. There are people who are still trying to figure out how to minister to these people, even though maybe the conversation isn't as quote unquote sexy as it used to be.
Right. But I mean, that's, I mean, and that itself is an important point. Cause I mean, you've got to remember the oldest of the millennials is pushing 40
right
now.
Right. And the youngest is like just graduated.
And the youngest is in college.
College. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're not talking about people who are these strange, scary kids who listen to music we don't understand. And
if you're listening to this and you're like, oh, those darn millennials or whatever, if they're in your youth group, they are not millennials.
Correct.
One of the funniest questions I got on a radio interview one time, I think it was a radio interview, was, well, what are you going to write about when you're not a millennial anymore? And I said, I'm always going to be a millennial. People have synonymized millennial and young person. And I think we need to realize that millennial is baby boomers weren't always old.
Right.
Millennials aren't always going to be young.
They were the protesting generation. They were the ones rocking the boat.
Exactly, right.
You know, guys, to be you know, their version of it. This is important. Yeah. This is important. Baby boomers were millennials once too.
that's very good. That's tweetable. We need to tweet that out sometime. So anyway, the book tries to help people just understand and then minister in the realities that are going on. And a lot of them affected by the internet.
Chris, talk about the misconceptions of millennials in terms of attention span.
Yeah.
In its relation to reading. So I just want to, your observations, A, as a professional in this area, sure, but also just as one living through it too.
Yeah. Yeah. I think growing up, let's start at the beginning. I hated reading growing up. Like I grew up, you know, and I was born in 1990. So like, I remember I had like a Sega Genesis growing up. I loved video games as a little kid. I still like them today, but as a little kid, I especially loved them. So like if a book couldn't keep my attention as long as Mario Kart, I was going to play Mario Kart. Like, that's just kind of how it was. And so, you know, growing up, when I found a book I liked, I loved reading it and would read it super fast. But I got super picky about books. And if it did not hold my attention in the first couple chapters or 50 pages, I would never return to it. Like, I read the Harry Potter books growing up. I stopped. What's funny is I stopped halfway through book 4, The Goblet of Fire, which today is my favorite book. But I stopped halfway through because an 800-page book in the fourth grade was like, I got bored and I went and played Mario Kart and never came back or whatever. But I think that was part being a kid and part being a millennial in the situation. There were more distractions.
Right.
Today, is it true that millennials have a shorter attention span than older generations? I think so. I mean, I think that's part of why YouTube and 10-minute videos are more popular than 45-minute videos a lot of times. And I think I see a lot of evidence of shorter attention spans, but not an inability to pay attention, more a heightened selectiveness about what they pay attention to. Sure. Time is such a premium.
My wife would disagree, and she'd say I've always had a terrible attention span. Sure. Books certainly.
Yeah.
But also like I know like the label when I say millennials is that I'm like, yeah, but when you're presented with these things of how you use every day, like I'm sort of it affects me as a Gen Xer as well. Like the fact that my phone's changed me and everything. Like, I don't have the same attention
span. And you know, I think that there's some degree that we who are of older generations than you Utes.
We're not that much older.
I know.
These labels are terrible.
Dude. I know. They're the worst. They're the worst. But, you know, we're just going to have some fun with it because why not? Let's just be old people who tell people to get off our lawns. I think that there's some of this that, to a degree, we have a tendency to take what's actually our issues and place them on a younger generation. So what we'll do we have our shiny glowing screens that are super intriguing and distracting for us. And the thing with that is because they're not native to our experience, the novelty and the new all all hits us in a different way than it would, say, someone who's always grown up with them. I mean, Chris, you know, being born in 1990, you don't really have a memory of the world without the internet.
No, I mean, my dad worked for IBM.
Right.
He worked from home. There's a news article from 1993 in my local, like, Fort Wayne, Indiana newspaper of my, I was on the front page, sitting on my dad's lap, sitting in his home office, because they were amazed he had multiple phone lines in our house to have the internet and a work phone on top of our home phone landline.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, you know, I was goofing around on floppy disk video games and early stages of the internet before I was reading books.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it's a completely different world. Part of the reason I was hesitant to start a blog that was dealing with millennials, because I did see it as trite. But at the same time,
appreciate your honesty.
Trevin, if you ask Trevin, he would attest. I protested hard, but at the same time, I was super frustrated then and still am at just the sort of dismissiveness of, like, oh man, these millennials are so blank, and then it just, whether it be distracted or liberal or whatever you want to put in that blank. Yeah. And then it was just sort of a, like, and that's just how they are, and we just are going to push them to the side. A lot of those things are not true. Some of them are. The whole purpose of why I decided to endeavor on the millennial stuff in general was we need to be able to push through that stuff. Like, those are all realities.
Yeah.
Let's not scoff at it. Hmm. Let's figure out how to minister among it. I mean, it's just a very, like a mission field thing. You know, like, if you think a group of people needs the gospel, you got to understand what makes them tick and how they think and how they work, and not just brush it off as, oh, they're just this way and we're, how could they be that way, but learn to minister among that. And that's been the whole heart behind why I've done it.
Cool. All right, so in light of that, so as not just as a millennial who also have the reputation of not being big readers, which is also not true.
Sure.
Every person varies on that. So, but certainly one of the things that we have seen in mainstream evangelicalism is a struggle for people to read. And certainly in the broader culture as well.
Right.
People tend to not read at a voracious pace, like, say, a Dave or me or even you would.
Yeah.
And voracious to different people means different things.
Of course.
I mean, they're stupid ridiculous, which is, you know, that's me.
4 books a week. I'm like,
it depends on the week and what the books are.
Like, do your children ever see you?
Well, that might be for different reasons. And
we talked about the tricks of the trade previously.
Yes, we did. On a previous episode, we talked about how sometimes
loose
you skim
of what it means to read a book.
That's right. Like, yeah. Also, I'm just gonna say there are some books that are very quick to read.
Oh, well, sure.
And they totally count because they have multiple pages.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's good. It's good. Yeah. So there we go. Let
me try this one thing. It's so funny what you were saying, Chris, earlier. Of course, I'm referencing a movie, not a book here, but it's so poignant. Lincoln. I hope everyone's seen Lincoln.
Yep.
Such a good movie. So I don't know if this quote came from Team of Rivals, the book it's based on, but, you know, there's a scene where Abraham Lincoln is talking to Kylo Ren. I'm just going to say this because he's in it.
Is he really?
Adam Driver's in it.
Oh, my goodness.
He plays a very small part.
Is he actually playing Kylo Ren in it? Because that would be fantastic.
That'd be so good. No, but Link is just kind of contemplating how to respond to something. And, you know, you see him. He asks these big questions, right, all the time. Do you think we choose the times into which we are born, or do we fit into the times we are born into?
Yeah.
Of course, it's Lincoln, so he's trying to, you know, he's trying to understand his place of why he's in this position.
Right.
But I think generally, I think it's fascinating because I've always been like, man, like, when would it be like living, you know, as a same age, a young person in that era?
Yeah.
Like, what would you do? And the reality is you're shaped by the culture of the times no matter what.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's why I'm fascinated with millennials is just saying, like, I think they're doing the absolute best with it that they can.
Totally.
And
right. Totally.
And I'll say this other thing. I, as someone who's hired a lot of millennials, The ones I've hired are some of the absolute best ever. And I can say that over many in my generation, which is not that far off, but just hardworking, willing to make a name for themselves, willing to be humble, which is contrary to make a name for themselves. I just mean like ambitious in a good way.
Sure.
Yeah. Willing to work for it, willing to roll up their sleeves and do things.
They're hungry. That's the
which
thing.
I love.
Yeah. Right.
But what I love is they're willing to... in the most general way, make a difference. They want their time to count, which, boy, how do you not respect that?
Right. Yeah.
I mean, some people will say, oh, well, that's why they jump around from job to job. I'm like, that's not what I see. Certainly there are some, but I knew plenty my age that did the same thing. It means they had a short attention span and didn't have a clear understanding of what their purpose is, of how God defined them their purpose.
Well, so many millennials grew up in homes where parents were working jobs that they hated. And it's like, if you're going to spend 40 to 60 hours a week doing something, I mean, millennials, not me, because thankfully my mom didn't work much. My dad did, and my dad loved his job, so I didn't see this. But I had plenty of friends who saw parents who couldn't spend time with them or whatever else because they were working a job that they hated. What a miserable existence.
Right.
So I think so many millennials were exposed to that. They're like, why would I ever do that? I'm going to do something that I make sure I love doing, and maybe money will take a little bit of a backseat.
Totally. Yeah. Well, the other side of that, too, is and then we'll get back to a couple of quick hit questions.
Sure.
Yeah. Here, since we know you have a limited amount of time with us today, Chris is a really big deal, guys.
Oh my gosh. He's a
big deal.
We had to go through his people's.
No, I know, I know.
Let's be clear. I don't have people. They didn't have to go through my wife. If I have people that help with anything, they didn't have to.
It was Agent Rizzo.
So I mean, that's right. So, but here's the thing, like with millennials and the perception of jumping from job to job to job, some of that's just out of necessity.
Sure.
You have literally nowhere else to go. I mean, there's the myth of progression in a career. Sometimes there's a giant plywood ceiling called your boss.
Right.
And you can't get past that because either that person is either fantastic at their job, which is the best case one, but you at 27, you've peaked in your career. At 27, you've probably got some other things to do. Chances are, you know, that there's also, you know, some more nefarious reasons for being blocked.
Sure.
That we don't need to go into because they're sketchy. and I'm not gonna say the word that I was thinking of saying because one time. It sounded like I said a word that I shouldn't say.
Okay, all right.
So I'm not going to do that. but anyway, let's transition back to books and reading. So, one quick thing before we ask you, what are some books that you are loving and reading right now? How is it that you try to cultivate good reading habits?
I try to read a lot and read widely. I don't know. Some people calculate how many books they read in a certain time period. I've never kept track. Because it's not impressive, so it's not like I'm going to impress anyone.
I disagree.
I don't like reading more than one book at a time, usually.
Yeah.
Especially in the same genre. So if I might be reading a theological book and a novel at the same time, but I'm not going to read two theological books at the same time unless, like, I just graduated from seminary 9 months ago, and so I did then, for sure.
Sure, because you don't really have a choice
No. But for pleasure, I'm usually just trying to do one book at a time. I'm pretty singularly focused.
Right.
You know, now as I'm driving, I used to work from home a lot. Now I'm working in the office a lot. I am doing a lot of audiobooks, so right now it's kind of like I have an audiobook and a physical book going on at a particular time.
Two thumbs up. That's right.
Word.
Yeah. So I honestly, like, I have a lot of friends, you guys, and plenty of others who probably read way more than I do. I like doing other things other than reading. I lead the youth group at my church. So I probably read two books a month. Maybe something like that.
That's not bad.
But I try to read.
That's not bad at all.
I try to read a bunch of different stuff.
Yeah.
So I recently, last year, read a book called 1491 because I was just super interested about what America was like before Europeans got here. And I was like, what was America like before Columbus got here? And like, I'm reading random biographies about disciplines and people I've never really thought about, but I'm like, I want to know what their life is like.
Nice.
Or, you know, I like to read. I kind of have theological book burnout because I did 4 years of Bible school and then 4 years of seminary.
Oh, so yeah, I'm that'll kind fry of, anybody.
I'm kind of not reading super deep theological books that frequently right now. I'm kind of trying to read some other things. So that's what I'm on, that's what I'm into.
That's his way of saying he's going to read my theology books.
Yeah.
They're not super deep.
Yeah, right.
They are right. Short. All right, cool. That's good. That's good. All right, so real quick. What are a couple books you're reading right now?
Or have read lately.
Yeah. What have you finished?
So,
what are you in progress on?
So let's go through. Quick hitting. So I got a subscription to Audible in October for my birthday. First thing I did was I'm going to read. I'm starting the slow progression of reading one presidential biography of every president. Because I love presidential. I love American history in general. I love presidential stuff. The office of the president has always super fast. I used to want to be the president when I was in like middle school. I had a plan mapped out and everything. So the office of the president.
Dude, you've got 12 years before you're eligible.
I know. I could get
president
back on
Martin.
You know what? If by that time I'm allowed to vote.
Would you vote for me?
I would.
Because I think audiobooks count. That's
absolutely. You're going to make audiobooks great again.
So I read Chernow's. Is it Chernow or Chernow?
Chernow.
Chernow's Washington was the first one I read, which was like a 64-hour audiobook, by the way.
Yeah.
It was obscenely long.
Did you read it? Did you do it at single speed or at 1.5?
I'm not sure. No, it was like 1.25.
Okay, good.
It was barely faster than normal.
Good.
Yeah. Look, man, I'm not in a rush. I'm driving 45 minutes a day for work.
That's true.
I'm going to try to understand what I'm reading.
Just going to recommend 1.5 times.
Yeah.
It sounds like a normal conversation speed.
Okay, all right. So 1.25 is good for me. So I was doing, I did Washington.
It's the nerdiest.
I did.
The best nerdy conversation.
I did Flyboys by James Bradley, who did Flags of Our Fathers. Flyboys, I haven't read Flags of Our Fathers yet. Flyboys was great. Then I did.
I will say this. We talked about, do you cry when you're reading books? You cry after reading Flags of Our Fathers.
Okay, all right.
In fact, we want
selfies.
I'm gonna stamp.
So Flyboys was great. I read a book. Now this is probably a little off color for this podcast. I read a book because it was on sale from Audible called What the F, and it's about and it literally is called What the F.
Not the curse word
in the title.
I'm offended.
But it's a book about what cursing says about humans and the human brain.
Interesting.
It was an audiobook, which was kind of funny. More cursing in a book than I've ever seen. But it was all from a sort of scientific perspective.
Yeah.
It was really interesting.
Yeah.
It was really interesting. I love sociological stuff like that. So that was interesting. Spaceman by Mike Massimino.
Uh-huh.
He's an astronaut, grew up in like Queens, New York. He describes like the most unlikely guy to ever become an astronaut. I got it on sale on Audible. He narrates it. It was fantastic.
Nice.
One of the best books I've ever read, and just a great audiobook experience because it was just him telling his story.
Yeah.
And I've always loved space and astronomy and all that. So it was good. True Grit, which was fine.
Yeah.
And right now I'm reading Leonardo by Walter Isaacson, who wrote Jobs biography, wrote Franklin biography. I read both of those. They're good.
Very
Leonardo's
cool.
good.
It's a beast.
I don't recommend Leonardo on audiobook, though. It's fine.
It's a beautiful book.
Well, and they have lots
images
of images and stuff.
You
and
so,
you want.
And so they have
you
like
want
a
pictures.
PDF that you can go through and look at, but I can't do that while I drive. So,
no.
Anyway, that's what I've been reading.
Cool. That's awesome. Yeah. Those are some great books.
Yeah.
You just gave me a ton of stuff to read.
Yeah,
no. Starting with the one that you're concerned is off color, which, you know, I mean, just.
I mean, it definitely.
If
foul language offends you just in hearing it, do not listen to that book.
Oh, totally.
But if you can hear it in a sort of like
clinical manner,
like a scientific lab context, it is a fascinating read.
Yep, totally.
So yeah, that's what I've been reading.
Cool. Those are great.
Yeah.
Dave, real quick, what's on your plate?
All the Pretty Horses, Cormac McCarthy.
You still working on that?
I'm still working on it. I know.
Oh, yeah. Makes sense.
Well, no, what I did is I put it aside because I was reading. I just finished. I put it aside. I started it, but long story, going on vacation, I was like, I need something a little more fluff.
Yeah,
Brad Metzger's President's Shadow, which is, you know, Culper Ring fun. It's mindless chewing gum for the mind, but fun. So,
cool.
There you go.
Very cool.
So both of them. But nice. But I will say this, all the pretty horses, I'm 100 pages in. It is totally about capturing a young generation's search for significance, purpose, the whole bit, like, and that mm-hmm. took place in 1949. You know, it's fiction, but it's like a lot of the same questions that we're asking right now with millennials and Gen Z or whatever
next
generation is. So
yeah,
go ahead. Cool. Aaron, what do you got?
Cool. I've got three real quick. All so. Right, cool. First one that I just finished is Super Sons, Planet of the Capes. It's a comic book. It's fantastic. So much fun. And a lot of what I do with reading comic books, aside from the ones that are just for me, because there are some that are they're just my time. But a lot of them, I'm doing pre-reads for my daughters and for my son as well. Because I want them to engage with different kinds of storytelling, mm-hmm. and it's a fantastic medium for storytelling.
I would love to get into comic books.
We're gonna
don't even know where to start.
I'll help you with that. Okay. So, the other one that I'm reading, this is another pre-read for my kids, is The Magic Misfits, written as with his name on the cover, at least Neil Patrick Harris. It is a middle grade fiction piece. I'm not 100% sure if I'm going to pass that on to my kids or not. And then the last one is one that a friend of mine here at the office recommended, Andrew Hudson, and who I know doesn't listen to this podcast, but
he is not.
Andrew gives good recommendations. Radical books? Candor.
Radical Candor.
Okay. Radical Candor. Mm-hmm. So it is a management book on how to be a great boss.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. I just started it on my commute into the office this morning. I got about an hour and a half into it because Nashville traffic. But it is terrific.
Let me say, to circle back to something, sorry to interrupt, but
it's all good.
Spaceman was so good. Mm-hmm. I literally missed the exit to my house one day because I was so into it.
That's amazing.
It was like genuinely, it is just that he's so good at telling the story. It's so fascinating. I highly recommend.
We read Endurance by Scott Kelly. Yes. Aaron and I did. You would love that as well.
So it was good. It was good.
Is Endurance about, what's his name?
Scott Kelly.
Scott Kelly.
Oh, Scott. Yeah,
his 1 year in space.
Yeah.
It's terrific.
Yeah.
I mean, again, like all the other ones, if you are particularly sensitive to colorful language, you may have moments where that book is a struggle for you. Yeah. Use your wisdom. Chris, man, thanks so much for being on the podcast with us today. This was super fun.
This was fun. I love podcasts. Cool. It's good to hang out with you guys.
All right. Okay. Guys, we'll catch you next time.
Thanks for listening to Reading Writers, a podcast on the joy of reading widely. If you've enjoyed this episode, please consider leaving a rating and review on iTunes. Your feedback helps more people find the show. You can find me on Twitter at Aaron Strongarm. And for more content, including reading recommendations, please visit bloggingtheologically.com.